Welcome once again to EWTN's Bookmark. I'm Doug Keck, your host. Our guest author, Lisa Marie Corzon, PhD, the book Sister Soldier Surgeon, The Life and Courage of Sister Deidre Byrne, MD, published by our friends over at Sophia Press, naturally available through our EWTN religious catalog, EWTNRC.com for all things Catholic. And it's a pleasure to meet you.
Blessed to meet you.
First time here on Bookmark.
Yeah.
And you were on with Jim and Joy, so people would have seen you on that. And also, you were on with Sister Deidre, with Raymond DeRoyo.
Yes.
Back last Christmas,
yes.
Around last Christmas. And you were on there talking about this book that my understanding is basically at least a Catholic bestseller at this point in time.
Praise
right?
God. We are so grateful. Well, with the subject matter, you can't go wrong. This
right.
woman is incredible.
Now, you've written many, many books over the years, right?
No.
Oh, okay.
This is my very first, and this was an authorized biography. I have to tell you, when I called Sister for permission to write the book, she said, oh, you must be writing a comic book.
Right.
And then she begged me to wait until she was dead. Mm-hmm. And I said, Sister, our nation, our church, our children and grandchildren need your voice now more than ever. So, no, I can't wait till you're dead.
Right. Well, you talk about it in the book, seeing her on television, what, at the Republican National Convention?
Yes.
Where
yes,
she came out. What was it about what she said that spoke to your heart?
I tell you, we have been storming heaven for faith-based leaders willing to be courageous in the public square. And I was watching, not expecting her to be there. And there she was in full habit, walked onto that stage, held her rosary high for the entire nation to see, and declared herself to be not only pro-life, but pro-eternal life. Mm. And I love telling people, I cheered in my living room mm-hmm. when she did that, as did many people of faith. Mm. And so it was that struck me, the courage of this woman to be fully habited, to hold her rosary high, and the fact that we need folks to be mm-hmm. courageous in the public square. So that's when I looked her
up. Well, it's interesting. In a sense, it was the sister soldier surgeon moment, to quote Bill Clinton from many, many years ago. One of the things that's interesting, too, in the book is the there's just pages upon pages of endorsements that cross all different secular groups, including religious. Obviously, President Donald Trump, our own Raymond DeRoyo, of course, Mother Assumpta, who you had done some work with and know quite well, and is a longtime friend of the network, as well as our wonderful sisters. Why do you think this book struck such a chord with so many people across, including Glenn Beck?
Yeah, I love that question. Thank you for that, mm-hmm. because it's so rarely commented on, the way she has this crossover appeal mm-hmm. in so many avenues. So I think it's because she represents what all of us are called to do, and that is to love well. So that I say, while we may never be sisters or soldiers or surgeons, she appeals to that beauty, truth, and goodness, witnessing to the love of Christ. And I will tell you, peppers everything she does with a sense of humor such that people are drawn to her. And in a very unique way. Not only women who are coming out of Planned Parenthood, who are willing to speak with her and then end up in her clinic to reverse their chemical abortions, but politicians who are willing, you know, the walls come down. So there is definitely a crossover appeal.
Right. Now, in the foreword, it's actually written by, it's funny, because Most Reverend Joseph L. Coffey, Auxiliary Bishop, Archdiocese of Military Services, he sent me a copy of the book
yes.
with a note about it right away, and it was like, of course. He said, as a bishop and a shepherd of souls, I greatly desire to see the spiritual children entrusted in my care become saints. Too rarely do I see this as clearly as in the life of Sister Deidre D.D. Byrne, as he
yes.
calls her.
I will say, she witnesses so beautifully to the love of Christ that I think it's an example for us all. Mm-hmm. That's why it was transformational for me, that she made holiness seem attainable, mm-hmm. that it was the unfolding of sanctity in the everyday actions of life, in the small things that St. Teresa mm-hmm. talks about, the little way.
Right.
And so I think that's where the holiness, where we can cultivate that holiness. And this is the purpose of the whole book, not only a call to virtue, but a call to action in the public square as well, living out our faith in the public square, and her call to remind us all to remain in the state of grace.
Well, you use the quote, and he uses it as well, I'm not just pro-life, I'm pro-eternal
yes.
life. And is that something that we've really lost in the church, that eternal life aspect?
Yes, yes. And in her prescriptions that you'll read about in section two, one of
you
those...
besides going to confession?
Yes,
I saw that
yes.
one.
And one of them is this reminder that we were created for God. And guess what? We learned this in first grade in the Baltimore Catechism.
Absolutely.
Why did God make me? God made me to know him and to love him and to serve him in this world and to be happy with him in the next. Mm-hmm. This is what she reminds us.
Right.
Sister just echoes Holy Mother Church in this call to virtue. Why? So that we can all be friends and end up in heaven today.
Right. He says, while the Second Vatican Council warned that the quote-unquote the split between the faith which many profess in their daily lives deserves to be counted among the more serious errors of our age. It's interesting because, in a sense, it seems like that got worse, kind of as a misunderstanding of the Vatican Council. But that's a big part of this, too, this idea that people are separating out, in a sense, that they have their private spiritual life and then their secular life, maybe their public life.
Right.
And the fact that she melds those two together courageously, I mean, it's tough to argue with somebody who's a soldier, who wore a gun at one point in time and has served in all different parts of the world, Afghanistan, in Pakistan, Korea, obviously in sub-Saharan Africa.
Yeah, and she will tell, and she was dubbed the nun with a gun when she was in Afghanistan, and the conversions that came from that are just incredible. But you're right, it's that sense of permeation in the public square that we know faith is personal and private, but if it is only personal and private, if it fails to inform every dimension of our lives and every decision that we make, then it's not real faith at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's a clarion call to live what we believe, mindful that if the disciples had only remained in the upper room praying, where would the church be today?
Right.
So that we are called to come from out of that upper room, from beyond prayer, and to live our faith boldly and lovingly.
Well, do you think maybe the problem is people heard about leaving the upper room, but they left their faith up there?
Oh my gosh, brilliantly said.
Right.
Yeah. And the courage that it takes for the disciples to have come out and spread the faith,
right?
This is why, and by the way, I will call her chapel the upper room. She went into her chapel shortly after the Democratic National Convention in 2020, very troubled and saddened by the fact that she saw two religious giving prayer at the convention and was saddened by the fact that this might cause confusion among some
Catholics.
Was
designed to.
And so she went into her upper room, you know, her chapel, and prayed and begged God to use her as a voice for the voiceless. Not more than 2 hours after coming out of the chapel, she got a call from the White House asking her to be on the Republican National Convention stage. And she said, may I speak about pro-life?
Mm-hmm.
And they said, absolutely. And she said, I'm in.
Right. And that's where you talk about it being like her Esther moment.
Yes.
Well,
yes,
explain.
Exactly. She was designed for this moment in time to come out with this message so boldly and courageously, to proclaim, by the way, what she knew to be true not only from Holy Mother Church, that life begins at the moment of conception and until must be protected until natural death, but that also her science and medical school training had taught her. This was what she wanted to do. And when she got calls of complaints, even from irate Catholics after that appearance, and claim, you know, they would say to her, nuns have no business being in politics. She was very clear. No, this
especially
isn't about politics.
Especially if they're tweaking my conscience.
Yes, that's right. And she would say, this is not about politics. This is about the truth of Christ and the moral conviction that life begins at the moment of conception.
Right. And you talk about here in the preface about her following, go therefore and make disciples of all nations. Sister now travels the globe, goes on to say, after spending decades healing people's physical wounds, she now heals spiritually as well. Her message is simple, to stay focused on God, never go ahead of him, but to go with him. I think that's a big problem. Even good people sometimes get out in front of God. And she reminds us that life begins at the moment of conception and must be protected until natural death. She encourages us for the frequent reception of the sacraments and stresses always to be in a state of grace. And you go on to say that she was dubbed the Mother Teresa of D.C., and she lives an inspirational life of joyful service called both virtue and action. And you talk about that upper room. And one of the things that struck me, you talk later in the, you kind of go through her life, and then you have a week in her life that you did. But one of the things that struck me, and I wanted to make sure I got it in, because the convent setting stage you talk about, immediately inside the door is a small table on the left filled with reading materials such as abortion pill reversal brochures, police officer's devotional book. This is the one that struck me. copies the Emancipation Proclamation, yes, and there's countless prayers and devotion. Why the Emancipation Proclamation?
She has always loved her country. Mm-hmm. She has always, and her call to the Army, she wanted to help her parents defray the cost of medical school. Her father was a cardiothoracic surgeon, right, which inspired not only holiness in the family by their daily reception of Holy Communion, daily saying of the rosary together as a family, but her dad also then inspired not only her, but two of her brothers to go into medicine. Mm-hmm. And so, in order to help relieve that burden, she went into medical school on an Army scholarship. And so that immediately merged her twofold calling, mm-hmm, I'll say surgeon and soldier together. And she just loves the country and wants, every day the sisters pray the Patriotic Rosary for the country. They offer each decade to a branch of government or a bishop or, you know, and pray for the country and all the leaders.
Right, and you talk about, obviously, her upbringing. Her father, yes, came from a big family. The mother, yeah, came from a family. They came together. Daily communion,
yes,
family dinners, even though they're described somewhat as pandemonium at the same time. Now, she was injured when she was young. What was that about?
Yeah, she had a congenital dislocated hip, mm-hmm, and so she was in a body cast. She used to joke that her brothers and sisters would drag her around and step on her to reach things, to get a glass, and so she would joke that sometimes it is humbling if you let people step on you because it raises them to higher things.
Right. Yeah, that's a great line. She had an uncle who was a Father John, who also,
yes,
got involved with politics or,
yes,
stood up for the strike at Calvary on Long Island, in Queens, basically.
A little bit of foreshadowing, wouldn't you say?
Right, like stepping out and getting involved with the radio. Did she actually say a funeral or have a funeral for a snake?
Well, she thought that the snake had died because it had shed its skin, so she, yeah, had a funeral service for it. You know, she had a very tender heart, a heart for service. At very young ages, she was leafing through missionary magazines, watching the nuns.
Probably those Mary Knowles that,
yes,
we used to all get,
yes,
when we were kids, right?
And she fell in love early with Mother Teresa as well, mm-hmm, and wanted to do what Mother did and what the sisters in those books did, a heart for service.
Right.
Her mom will tell you, who is now 102 as of a few days ago, by the way, mm-hmm, and lives at the convent with Sister Didi. She will tell you that she has a heart for service at a very young age and a vocation in utero.
In utero, yeah, yeah. It's actually one of your subtitles here. The other thing I was thought of, another childhood memory includes Didi's fifth grade volunteer initiative that turned frightful.
Yeah.
Do you remember that story?
Yeah. She was helping set up for the science fair and actually was physically threatened at one point and ended up with the sister coming and asking what had happened, and she was, you know, frightened at that point. She was always doing things, you know, with her siblings, for example, even in the heart of service. That she used to pray. She read a book when she was a young girl and used to pray about how to rescue the Jews. So they would, you know, always just this common theme,
right,
throughout her life of a theme of service and of helping others.
That's interesting, because I remember the story when she was in Harlem on 9/11, and,
yes,
she got down there, and one of the quotes was a Jewish police officer.
Yeah.
I think it was a woman who had asked, could you please pray for these people?
That's right.
Right.
She went hoping to be able to do surgery or help there, and nobody came. Everybody was dead.
They were all gone.
Was, yes.
She, yeah, talk about it. I think it was the idea of, I'm sure we breathed in human remains.
Yes.
Basically.
Yes, and she uses, even to this day, Doug, you know, this idea of ground zero being the womb, right? A place where it should be life and happiness and joy, and now that the womb has become ground zero, and equates that to abortion.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talk about also the fact that a little bit of her background when she went to medical school. What's interesting, because she went to Virginia Tech,
yeah,
okay, which is not a Catholic school, but she went to daily mass, basically,
yes,
there, which indicates that this was something that was not being contextualized from the outside, and this was, mm-hmm, coming from her internally.
Yes. Yes, even her roommate will tell you that she was transformed by watching Didi go to daily mass. And she said her roommate, whereas most kids go to college and sometimes lose their faith, her roommate will tell you she went to college and gained her faith, mm-hmm, because of Sister Didi. So, and not only did Sister go to mass daily then, but even through her 10 years of residency and that daily grueling medical routine, mm-hmm, if she couldn't get to mass, she'd have the priest bring her Holy Communion in a side room. Never once in that time did she miss daily communion.
What was the Sunshine Club?
Oh, you know, this is her way. And I will tell you, mm-hmm, every person I interviewed, I expected nice little stories about her impact. Mm-hmm. And it was never, ever that. It was always a transformational impact and a ripple effect of virtue in people's lives. The Sunshine Club was when she was in the Sinai Peninsula, and she would take the women in to the Red Sea on Sunday afternoons and teach them about their dignity as daughters of the king. So maybe she would notice that some were struggling with their purity, or femininity, and she would explain them. She would call it a mini theology of the body before there even was a theology of the body. Okay. So it was a beautiful, and when she left her time there, there was a scrapbook of testimonies, both from men and women, of how she influenced them not only to become a better soldier, but to become a better
Christian.
That's
that ripple effect
yes,
you talk about throughout the book.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes.
Also, the sister spoke frequently of her favorite saints and encouraged Lisa and Denise to incorporate, this is in the section of the book, incorporate a regime of regular spiritual reading. Two of her favorite saints were St. Faustina, St. Edith Stein. St. Faustina's devotion to the Blessed Sacrament, Edith Stein's strength and perseverance and suffering and persecution were examples and inspirations for her.
Yes. And at that time at St. Agnes, she was even able to help influence the Catholic identity of the hospital.
Is that in Baltimore?
Yes. And Lisa and Denise will tell you, and part of that story, that they used to joke and say, oh, go down to the radiology department by following Jesus's right hand, you know.
Right.
And over time, the Catholic identity of the hospital was weakened and weakened, and Sister was able to influence that back to strengthening it.
Right.
You'll get to read about that in the book.
Right. She didn't only have the heart of Cardinal Hickey, she actually held it in her hand, right?
Cardinal Hickey, Mother Teresa, and Father John Hardin, I would say, and Sister Philip Marie Berlin.
Father Hardin.
I would say were her biggest influences in her life. But yes, when Cardinal Hickey came in with crushing chest pain, and she was the first assistant surgeon on call, she got to literally hold the Cardinal's heart in her hands during the surgery, and then got to tend to him post-op for 5 days. At that point, they became friends, and he became sort of a spiritual mentor to her.
Yeah, unfortunately, he wasn't around long enough because for the plans originally, or maybe it wasn't, maybe it was God's plan, but apparently was it Cardinal McCarrick who kind of rescinded the locale that she was being given as a maybe future convent, and that kind of changed a lot of plans, didn't it?
And you know, I'm glad you brought that up because there are people who like to read about those little setbacks to see how did Sister overcome them, that she's a normal person just like all of us, but that she overcomes these difficulties and obstacles in virtue-filled ways. And so, yes, she was eventually had to take a different route. In fact, she wanted to be a missionary of charity, Sister. She wanted very much.
Didn't she want to start some medical part of it? And
yes.
She was going to meet with Mother Teresa,
yes.
but then she died really before she got a chance to meet
with
her.
Well, when Mother came to D.C. for that week when she received the Congressional Medal of Honor, Sister was able to tend to her medically during that week. During that time, she had an opportunity to talk with Mother about starting a medical branch. Mother didn't feel that was the place of the Missionaries of Charity, and so Father Hardin, in that time, Sister said, well, Father Hardin, I think I'll just give up this idea of being a doctor and just join the missionaries. And Father Hardin said, no, we need good Catholic physicians. So your vocation is not with the Missionaries of Charity. Look for another order. And Sister was of the mindset that a door had been closed and a window had been opened with the Little Workers of the Sacred Hearts.
Right, and that's where that comes. Now, did she ever have to decide between scrubs, camouflage, or a habit, or did she always know?
I think she always knew, and there are some really sweet stories in the book you'll get to read about when one of the surgeons went into Walter Reed and saw a nun's habit hanging up in the changing room and came out to the nurse and said, what is a nun's habit doing hanging in the changing room?
So
they were constantly referring to Sister as a sister, and a soldier and a surgeon all together.
No. Now, it's interesting, too, because at the time that she was originally going to, I think it was her final vows at the time, she actually got blackballed by somebody, didn't she?
Yes, that's another obstacle that you'll get to read about, and that resulted in her being she repeated her formation, her years of formation. So she says that when she was able to get out of God's way and let God's will take over, that when she divested herself of her own will, that it was finally able to fully embrace God's will.
Right, and she actually did her final vows at this feast day of Our Lady of Knock.
Yes.
Right?
And her mom and dad's marriage feast day as well, anniversary, so she was blessed.
Let me ask you also with that, are you always disappointed, or you read these things, people tell you these stories, you say, I thought we're all working on the same team here.
Yeah, I know. And well, this chapter 3, section 3, deals with all of this, Doug. This call into the public square where she shows us what it means to be on the same team and what it means to get in the game, speaking of that sports analogy.
You also become a target.
That doesn't bother her, not one bit. And let me tell you why. Because she believes, as Cardinal Burke has so many times said, to love somebody means to tell them the truth, and that it is never loving and never merciful to withhold the truth from someone you love. And so that is why she approaches...
Even if it's spoken in love.
That's right.
Which is what you talk about.
Difficult things to say sometimes. Right. The women that she would have to approach, and by the way, in that 7-day period that I was with her, I watched her reverse 3 chemical abortions. One of the women that I talk about in the book was one such woman, and she would even, you can sense her sense of humor when she says, now Sarai, I'm a Catholic sister. You came to me. I didn't come to you. Yeah. So it should be no surprise to you when you hear me say, no hanky-panky before marriage. Mm-hmm. She would use this sense of humor to lower, the walls. And they would open up to her in a transformational way.
Now, in Chapter 10, medical license revoked in lawsuit in D.C. 2021 to 2022. We remember those years because they have something to do with COVID. And so does this, right?
That's right. She refused the COVID vaccine, and she submitted a religious exemption. The government of Washington, D.C. did not honor that exemption and suspended her medical license. She was very quick to get good legal representation, and within 3 weeks, it was restored. Mm-hmm. But during that 3-week period, you can imagine she couldn't minister to the very people that D.C. said they wanted to help, the poor and the marginalized. She was working at Sibley Memorial Hospital, doing free surgery for the poor, working at Catholic Charities, where for free she saw people on who were marginalized. So it was at that point that she got good representation and the medical license was restored.
Right. She got some publicity from Laura Ingraham's show and Raymond's show, right?
She did. And she was using the COVID, a protocol that was shunned by mainstream medicine, with 100% accuracy, by the way.
Gee, I wonder how that protocol is probably viewed today.
Administered to over 500 people. Yeah.
Right. I thought it was interesting near the end of the book to talk about the problem that ails us. The decline of compassionate health care, I believe, goes hand in hand with the rise of secularism in society and, sadly, the decline of faith in our church.
Yes. And she will also add to that the problem we face is not Republican versus Democrat, conservative versus liberal. It's our Lord versus the evil one. And on that note, I will tell you her newest mission now is the other end of the pro-life spectrum. So not just prenatal life that she's defending, but she's now getting out the word about euthanasia and end-of-life issues.
Right.
Her spiritual mentor, Sister Philip Marie Burley, was euthanized, and so they have a documentary now that she is out traveling the nation to get the word out about protecting life until natural death.
Right, absolutely. And we see that in Europe, obviously.
Yes.
We see it in Canada,
yes.
how these things are. It's not a slippery slope. It's like a downhill skiing.
Right.
I mean, it's just straight down. As soon as it starts, the next thing you know, people who have no reason to be euthanized are being euthanized.
That's right.
Not that anybody should be. In one of the chapters also, right around this, where you talk about Father Hardin's influence, she also says, the poor deserve our first fruits, not our leftovers.
Yes. Isn't that beautiful? And she will tell you we are called to be a fifth gospel. And I love that, because this is in addition to her her regular vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience, she took a fourth personal vow of loving and free medical care for the poor. Mm-hmm. This is her call to serve others. And part of the prescriptions, you'll know, is not only things like mass and confession and building up the family and the nuclear family being strengthened, but these other realms of being in the state of grace that help.
And as you said, part of it is providing that service, but not leaving your faith out of it.
That's right.
And so many things that even the church is involved in at times, because it takes government money, there are limitations on how much of the aspect of the gospel can be involved in actually doing good work, but not necessarily connecting it. Let me ask you, in going and doing the interviews and going around, what's it feel like to talk about somebody who's still alive?
This is the beautiful thing, is that she's still alive. And I'm convinced, well, on the road to sainthood, but emulates for us what it means to love well. It was a blessing and an honor, a transformation for me. Mm-hmm. I will tell you one thing that she exemplified for me is where the pro-life movement is going next. The idea that chemical abortions can be reversed is even unknown to many medical doctors. So I think this education of getting the word out about that and of accompanying hurting women. Mm-hmm. It's a new face for the pro-life movement, and I think this is where we're going next.
Right. Well, let me ask you, so when you wrote this book, how long did it take you to write it?
I started shadowing her in 2020, on and off at various times. I'd go to D.C. And then in earnest the last 2 years leading up into the election. It was supposed to be released August 15th, but we had some snafus. It did get released pre-election, but with the hopes that it would help Catholics to understand their call to the public square is meant to influence what they do in the voting booth as well.
Since this is authorized, I mean, did you submit your book for review to Sister or their order?
I worked with Sister. She was very generous in giving me some of her, her written speeches that she would give at various.
All those wonderful pictures.
Wonderful. And then I would shadow her for various things. She even gave testimony before the Catholic Medical Association, things like that, where she is constantly working even to defend Christ's truth out in the public, such that hopefully, by God's grace, policy for reform might be, coming from it.
Right. We can hope so. And we look forward to another book from you as well. Thank
Thanks,
you so much.
Thank you. God
Pleasure
bless you.
To meet you. Lisa Marie Carzon, PhD, author of this book, which is entitled Sister Soldier Surgeon, The Life and Courage of Sister Deidre Byrne, M.D. Couldn't recommend it more highly. It's available through the EWTN Religious Catalog. Mother would love this book. EWTNRC.com for all things Catholic. We'll see you next time right here on Bookmark. Thanks.